A new theory about the Wall Street flash crash.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Regulators are looking into the causes of the so-called flash crash back in May. Remember when the stock market just plunged momentarily? The Dow was down around 1,000 points and it yo-yoed back up. Well, today we've learned the Securities and Exchange Commission has some possible new leads in the case. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joins us live from our New York Bureau with more. Morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Bill.
What is the SEC's latest suspect?
Well, according to a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning, regulators are looking into a practice called quote stuffing, which is basically when high-speed traders place a whole bunch of orders one second and then cancel them all the next, maybe to psych out competitors. The other practice is called sub-penny pricing, and with that, traders are placing big orders for stocks at a slightly lower price than where the stock is trading just to try and get a tiny discount.
I liked the name flash crash, and now I'm enjoying quote stuffing and sub-penny pricing.
Good.
But Jeremy, why would all of this have caused the crash?
Because when you compare what happened in the flash crash with other mini flash crashes in certain stocks that have happened on other days, some see a pattern that high-frequency traders, perhaps intentionally, clog up the system with a ton of orders to slow down the information everyone else is getting and give themselves an advantage. And in doing so, stock prices can get screwed up, which is what happened on May 6th. Now, I spoke with Christopher Whalen of Institutional Risk Analytics, and he says regulators should take a close look at this.
It needs to be looked at. But there's nothing wrong with somebody putting a lot of orders in if they want to do it. Because remember, they're creating risk for themselves. They could blow themselves up if they make a mistake.
But Bill, he says all this kind of behavior turns ordinary investors off because they don't feel like the market is safe and they don't feel like they're competing on a level playing field.
Right. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson in New York City. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
As for stocks today, well, Asian investors were following up on yesterday's Wall Street party. Major markets in Asia rose about 1% today. Europe, not so impressed. Stocks are flat there. As I said, Wall Street really kicked up its heels yesterday at some good news about U.S. manufacturing. The Dow rocketed up 254 points. That's 2.5% to close at 10,269. There is a trend in urban living of the community garden. More and more cities have these shared neighborhood gardens, which means they're also dealing with veggie theft. Another great phrase. Chicago Public Radio's Tony Arnold reports on what it takes to make sure people can reap the fruits of their labor.
I'm standing here in the community garden of Jackson Park, located on Chicago's south side. There's no one around right now, and the garden itself is not that big, but it's wedged in between a major road and a golf course. And there's a sign up that says, "Do not steal our food. We work hard to grow our crops. If you'd like to grow your own food, we have plots available."
I've had things stolen. It's disappointing. It's frustrating. But I've still been able to reap the enjoyment of growing this plant.
Ben Helfand runs NeighborSpace, a land trust for community gardens. He says vegetable theft in an open space in a city of 3 million has been a problem since the gardens were created. Helfand says the best way to prevent stolen veggies is to simply be inviting with the space.
People are less likely to steal from sites that they know are well-tended and loved.
Helfand says he knows of one garden that purposely grows extra vegetables near the sidewalk for anyone to take as they please. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold from Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com.
Have you found yourself cutting back on your grocery bill, buying off-brands or less organic produce, yet you still splurge on your pet's food? It's a common practice and an understandable one. Marketplace's Adrian Hill joins us now to consider the financial and environmental costs of your beloved animal. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning.
So let's start with what it costs to keep a dog.
It's not cheap to keep a dog, as dog owners out there probably already know. But let's assume that public radio listeners are into rescue dogs. According to the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, depending on the size of your dog, you might spend about $1,300 in that first year for the dog. Food, grooming, all those things, vet costs. And again, that's if you're planning to adopt a dog. If you buy new, you're going to pay more.
Wow. Now, let's continue the never-ending argument over cats versus dogs. I'm going to guess a cat. I'm going to guess a cat would be cheaper. Yes?
Cats are cheaper. Cats run about $1,000 the first year you have it. But again, not cheap overall.
Okay, now what about your pet's environmental footprint or paw print?
I was in touch with a woman named Brenda Vale who wrote a book called Time to Eat the Dog, The Real Guide to Sustainable Living, to find out what the least environmentally and most environmentally friendly pets are. It turns out at the top of the bad for the environment list is also the most expensive pet, and that's the big dog. My sister has a Mastiff mix. She's fostering right now, so she probably doesn't want to hear this.
No, she's on she's on the list, huh? So what is the best pet for the environment?
Any guesses?
I'm thinking something ceramic that eats very little.
Eats nothing
at
all.
I don't know, a little gerbil?
It's actually a goldfish.
Goldfish. Okay.
The humble goldfish. As Brenda Vale put it, it's vegetarian. It is cold-blooded, and it's small.
So maybe your sister maybe consider a fish?
She's probably not going to give up her dogs. My sister loves the cuddliness and playfulness of the dogs. But if you're out there thinking about a pet, a goldfish is good for the environment and cheaper. A fish is only about $200 a year.
Good to know. Marketplace's Adrienne Hill. Thank you.
Thanks.
And finally, one of the biggest YouTube videos of all time is now a commercial. 13 million people have watched the Yosemite hiker discover a
double rainbow all the way across the sky.
The hiker, Paul Vasquez, had trouble fitting the entire double rainbow onto the video screen, which leads us to his new ad for Microsoft video editing software.
With Windows Live Photo Gallery, you can use Photo Stitch to combine adjacent photos and capture that double rainbow the way it should be captured. Full on, all the way across the sky.
What does it mean?
A sad commercialization of his innocent joy, or a brilliant marketing move? Or both. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.